Catch up on all the live shows right here on africatechradio.com.
Instead of crying about Mondays and too many days in the week, seize every day so that you don't have to pray for days that do not exist. Because trust me, the worst day is the day that doesn't exist. The one you crave for so much, but just doesn't come around. This is Tony's Tech Side. Welcome. We'll dig deep into the rubbles of history to find precious jewels of knowledge to launch us into the future, and then share the most important and juiciest tech stories impacting the continent to keep you informed. So you can also share your stories with the rest of us on WhatsApp. It's not just my stories. Text or send the voice notes. Yes, 0913-558-1766. Please add +234 if you're texting from outside Nigeria. You can hit us up on social media and then be involved in everything that we do here on Africa Tech Radio at A Tech Radio. Yes, on Instagram at Africa Tech Radio, everywhere else. So digging deep into the rubbles of history, on the 14/15 April in 1912, and this is like this week, the most memorable thing, something you would never forget that's happened this week, would be the RMS Titanic hitting an iceberg. And this was just 4 days into its first voyage from Southampton in England to New York in the United States of America. Ah, that movie. Butterflies in the tummy. But, well, over 1,500 passengers drowned when the ship sank early the next morning. That should be about 15th of April. Very sad. And the Marconi wireless equipment, yeah, this is where tech comes in. Listen closely. The Marconi wireless equipment on board is used to call for help. And effectively, this actually saves 700 people. And of course, you know, the whole, you know, drama about, you know, the boats, right? Yes, and the jackets that were not really enough. Yes, that's there. But then if, you know, we couldn't do this, let's just say thank you, tech, right? And I know that a couple of people have said those who have been saved through one man, Mr. Marconi, and his wonderful invention. But this actually takes my mind back to Nigeria. And there's recently something like this happened, and an actor or some actors actually lost their lives. And just a few seconds of silence for the souls in Nigeria who lost their life recently to a boat mishap, and the souls, the persons who lost their life in the tragic RMS Titanic mishap. And then fast forward to 18th of April in 1986, something that's also memorable for you to remember is the newspaper cuttings and reports that said that IBM's Model 1390 mainframe has become the first commercial computer to use a megabit memory chip. Ha ha ha, exactly, you'll be laughing. Well, at that time, it's 4 times the storage capacity of the then current generation of 256 kilobit chips. Now we're talking, I heard someone say 256, you know, gig, you know, I can't buy a phone with that amount of storage anymore, because like before, you know, like it's filled up. To give context to the amount of storage, it was reported that a megabit chip could store over 1 million bits of data, which translated to about 100 double-spaced typewritten pages. At the time, it was most personal computers were still using 64 kilobit memory chips. Yes, exactly. And IBM actually wanted to make the announcement for two big reasons. First, the use of higher density memory could allow them to make their mainframe computers smaller, and then this would save their customers costs in terms of floor space. And then also they wanted to show that American tech companies in general, and IBM in specific, could keep up with the Japanese companies in highly competitive semiconductor market at the time. And the semiconductor market still isn't in the US, but like as we speak now, but that's like a story for another day. So the lower cost Japanese firms had captured 85% of the drum markets, and Fujitsu, Hitachi, Mitsubishi, NEC and Toshiba were set to begin shipping megabit memory of their own. And IBM was also trying to, you know, remove that reputation, clean up that reputation, improve that reputation of being, you know, the slow and, you know, stodgy. You know, they don't always come quick, you know, when tech is changing. And they even made promotional buttons with actual 1 megabit chips to this particular, you know, to push this narrative. And well, If I'm going to help you better understand the word today on this side of tech, I think you'll be data center, because recently Google from South Africa to Kenya, they made the announcement recently, I think early this year, of a data center by Google on the continent. So a data center is a facility, a building, a place physically that's used to house computer systems and other equipments that are associated with this, such as telecommunications and storage systems. And what they do there is keeping the information that you store, like from your system, and you say you want to back, you know, do your backup to the clouds and whatnot. All of these things are stored in much more bigger supercomputers that are kept in a particular place. And people who are into, you know, climate change and whatnot would, you know, talk about how, oh, we should actually think about the environment when we're saying, yes, we like for these data centers to come to the continent, because there's a lot of, you know, air conditioning, you know, there's a lot of security devices that need to be put into place for a data center to actually be complete in one particular place. But, well, when you hear data center, just think of a building that houses big, 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 like way bigger computers, supercomputers that helps to store your information. I hope you got smarter this morning. I'll return in a bit and then would share the, say, top 5, 6 top stories that I think have rocked the continent in terms of tech and associated news. This is Tony's Tech Side. So starting up with the news that has made the week on the continent would be, you can't leave out Binance and Nigeria, yeah, with everything that's been happening. So Nigerian authorities have asked Kenya to arrest and extradite Nadim Anjarwalla, the Binance executive who escaped, in Nigeria's, you know, words, detention on 25th of March 2024 after being charged with tax evasion. And with this, a detective with the Directorate of Criminal Investigations, who asked not to be named, has shared that this has happened. He's, you know, he confirmed that Nigeria has asked Kenya to extradite him, but nothing has been done yet. And Nadim is the son of Atik Anjarwalla, a senior partner at Anjarwalla and Kana Advocates. It's one of the largest commercial law firms in East Africa, and they represent some of the top companies, you know, in the region, and a list of high net worth individuals. So they are really connected. Nadim holds Kenyan and British citizenship, and he was arrested alongside his colleague Tigran Gambaryan on 26th of February when they arrived in Nigeria to discuss the government's decision to block Binance. While Tigran is still in custody and has pled not guilty to money laundering charges, Nadim, in quote, escaped from an Abuja guest house where he was held, and he escaped to Kenya before he was arraigned. The Federal Inland Revenue Service in Nigeria accused Anjarwalla and other Binance executive of failing to register the crypto exchange with it for tax purposes. And they said that Binance failed to deduct the VAT, value added tax, and also aided, you know, the users, Nigerian users, evading taxes through its platform. And of course, Binance and the executives have denied the claims. According to Kenya's extradition laws, for Anjarwalla to be arrested, a Nigerian court must issue an arrest warrant, which should then be sent to Nairobi's Attorney General or Cabinet Secretary. And then Nigeria can also obtain a red notice through the Interpol, that's a global police body. And upon arrest, the Kenyan police must seek the consent of a court, a process that could take months and possibly years before it can now be effected. And then maybe the issue may have, you know, actually been settled by that time. A notable case that has been dragged is a request to send former Minister Chris Okemo and ex-Kenya Power CEO Samuel Gicheru to face money laundering and fraud charges in Jersey Island. That request was filed in 2011. So maybe Nigeria is just working a very, 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 well, it's just going to take a while before it happens. But who knows, right? If the right strings are pulled and if this government is happy with this government, then of course it can clearly happen. But we look forward to what's going to, how that's going to really shape up in the next few months. The biggest stories from the health space that has rocked this week would be the Benylin heartaches for Johnson & Johnson in Africa, J&J. And J&J has been in the news, even though they kind of like did like something with the name, which I'll talk about. And it may not technically be J&J anymore. So drug regulators in Tanzania, Rwanda and Zimbabwe have recalled a batch of Johnson & Johnson children's cough syrup as a precautionary measure after their Nigerian counterpart said that lab tests found high levels of toxicity. The countries joined, you know, not just Nigeria, but Kenya and South Africa in recalling the same batch of the syrup, the Benylin for children, that syrup, which is used to treat coughs, hay fever, and other allergic reactions in children. South Africa has also recalled another additional batch. Now, lab tests on the syrup by Nigeria's health regulator showed a high level of diethylene glycol, which has been linked to the deaths of dozens of children in Gambia, Uzbekistan, and Cameroon since 2022, in one of the world's worst waves of poisoning from oral medication. Now, this diethylene glycol is toxic to humans when consumed and can result in acute kidney failure. And Tanzania Medicines and Medical Devices Authority, TMDA, said it had begun to recall on 12th of April after hearing about the Nigerian test results. However, the Rwandan FDA issued the present recall for, you know, precautionary measures alone. And then Zimbabwe's Medicine Control Agency said that they didn't have a record of the product's importation into Zimbabwe, but that they were concerned that the syrup could enter the local market illegally, and they would set up inspections, you know, in case this happens. That's, you know, on the rough end of things for the health and tech space this particular week. But then in, you know, another groundbreaking development, Nigeria made history by being the first country to introduce the MEN-5CV vaccine as recommended by the World Health Organization, WHO. This vaccine, what does it do? Provides protection against the five strains of the meningococcus bacteria. Now, this actually is an initiative including the emergency vaccination efforts that's financially supported by Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance. They're funding the global meningitis vaccine stockpile and also trying to help low-income nations in implementing routine meningitis vaccination programs. Nigeria is in the African meningitis belt, in case you're, you know, thinking of where Nigeria is. And it's one of the 26 hyper-endemic countries for meningitis in Africa. Last year alone, that's 2023, there was a 50% increase in reported annual meningitis cases across the continent. And what exactly is meningitis? It's a very grave infection that causes inflammation of the membrane surrounding the brain and spinal cord. It can be caused by various pathogens such as viruses, bacteria, fungi, and parasites. The common symptoms would include headache, a fever, a stiff neck, and bacterial meningitis is particularly severe and can lead to blood poisoning, potentially resulting in death or severe disability within 24 hours of contracting the infection. And oh, we really hope that Romeo doesn't die. In fact, Ruger says Romeo must not die. Well, not exactly great news coming in from Dubai, and much love from the rest of the continent of Africa to Dubai. The United Arab Emirates experienced severe disruptions due to heavy rains this week on Tuesday, with significant flooding reported across major highways and even affecting operations at the city's state primary airport. So while I was having an interview this week, I think it was Tuesday. So reports say that the flooding happened overnight on Tuesday, and typically, you know, the streets were turned into vast ponds and airport tarmacs. The Dubai International Airport, which is like a global hub for international travels and home to the Emirates Airlines, you know, had like flight disruptions. So I was on that call with Al Kaf from Hawk Network, and we're talking about the virtual economy, right, and Sharia compliance. And then he talked about, I was like, oh, how's the weather looking? And he was like, oh, the weather. He talked about the rains and how like it's raining, heavy rains and all whatnot. And I was like, oh, okay, the rains are beginning to start just here, right? And well, of course, I just send my hearts out to them. The airport's authorities have announced a temporary cessation of all operations for approximately 25 minutes. That was on Tuesday afternoon. And diversion of all incoming flights until the weather conditions kind of improved, as this was communicated through their social media channels. Well, in Oman, the eastern edge of the Arabian Peninsula, the National Committee for Emergency Management released a statement confirming the grim toll of the heavy rainfall, the recent heavy rainfall, and at least 18 fatalities were recorded including the approximately 10 school children who tragically perished on Monday after being swept away in a vehicle along with an adult. This incident shows the increasing frequency and severity of extreme weather events attributed to human-induced climate change. And it's very crazy to note that this has actually been, how would I describe this now? Here in Dubai, that's where the last COP was held, COP28. And we're really, really hoping that, you know, people can actually begin to see and take these moves right now that we're having all of these things happening. Because if this can happen, the country, like where we literally had the COP28 conversations, and it looked like there was no way, there was nobody was moving forward with the conversations, right? The COP conversations. These conditions have enforced the evacuation of tens of thousands of people and even fatalities, 60 deaths in Pakistan and Afghanistan. Communities across the globe are facing the repercussions of climate-induced weather extremes. On the continent of Africa, more than 24 million people in Southern Africa face hunger, malnutrition, and water scarcity due to drought and floods that have continued for, I think, over 2 years now. Oh, this is, you know, we're not forgetting the heat wave that struck West Africa in February that made, you know, like 4 degrees centigrade hotter and 10 times more likely caused by human global warming. This is according to a study. I really hope that we can learn from this and that we can actually start taking steps that would help improve generally what we do, instead of thinking, oh, what's this about? Oh, we're not really going to take that much moves, because it feels like we have more at stake when we don't tackle climate change issues than when we do. Let's not tell ourselves beautiful lies. Let's look at it really as it is and then move on from there. So Apple sent security alerts to people in 92 countries on Wednesday, warning that their iPhones had been remotely targeted in a mercenary spyware attack. Now, Apple detected that, you know, you were being targeted by a mercenary spyware attack. That's what the notification, the threat notification email read. This attack is likely targeting you specifically because of who you are or what you do. And this targeting is happening right now as we speak. It's ongoing and it's global. This is according to a publication made by Apple. If your device is compromised by a targeted mercenary spyware attack, the attacker may be able to remotely access your sensitive data, communications, or even the camera and microphone. I was having this conversation with my brother. This was actually what the threat notification email, you know, also added. And I was having this same conversation with my brother just yesterday on our way to the airport. And I talked about how it's like really possible for anyone to actually have access to your camera and your microphone. And he's like, but then you say you just give access and you withdraw access. I'm like, yes, but for it to even work, it means you have some kind of access. So it can be done and it can be remotely done. And after I talked him through it, he was like, oh my word, yes, it's like really. And he's like, oh, now I should start covering. Like, I think it's Mark that does that, like, or I can't remember who the person is, but he's a tech guy who like covers his all the cameras, like devices, with something, a tape or something. And I'm like, well, that might be too extreme, right? But maybe you just don't want to be naked in front of it. You don't want to like do silly stuff, or you don't want to like say silly things, right? And it's like everyone is listening to something. And in any word, how can you actually get out of it? There's like a help page that was published this week, Wednesday, and it has advice from Apple. If you receive a threat notification from Apple, that's what you should actually do. Please, Apple strongly suggests that you enlist expert help, such as the Rapid Response Emergency Security Assistance provided by the Digital Security Helpline at the nonprofit Access Now. And the notification recipients can contact the Digital Security Helpline 24 hours a day, 7 days a week through Apple's website. Please and please, if you got the notification, let us know. And then, of course, let us know how you're also working towards ensuring that you're safe moving forward. Something else that's really big and has put a lot of people in the marketing space at edge is TikTok reportedly developing AI-powered virtual influencers that will be able to compete against human creators for lucrative advertising contracts. Can you imagine? The new AI avatars can allegedly read scripts for video ads. Listen, read scripts for video ads that are created from prompts that are submitted by brands and TikTok shop sellers. However, this feature is still in the testing phase, so everything is subject to change. And this is according to information, the information that we've gotten. What exactly will this mean? First, impact on sales. During testing, the TikTok researchers discovered that AI avatars haven't generated as many e-commerce sales as human influencers. Clearly, I think it's because it's the first time and like it's not like, you know, out in public, so it's not really getting people excited. And even if we get to that point, we'll just get to that point. It's going to be quick and then it would start to, drop again. And this is reportedly why the new feature hasn't been made available to marketers yet. And the platform TikTok suggested that this feature should complement existing human creators rather than replace them. So when they find a way to do that, they'll most likely push it, you know, to the markets, to marketers and to the public. Some advertisers, however, worry that AI influencers could be used to manipulate marketing and, you know, can also introduce manipulative marketing tactics. And when I say tactics, I mean one that would be much more manipulative than the one that's already existing. You thought we didn't know. Additionally, the rise of virtual creators could steal business from real influencers, possibly leading some users to leave the TikTok platform. Maybe that's gonna happen. I really don't know, but TikTok is already, you know, this might be the second iteration or the third iteration of TikTok, right? And it might mean that they would most likely, you know, just elongate their life, like the lifespan of TikTok. But we're yet to see if, you know, what kind of effect this is going to have. If the real creators get lesser jobs, then maybe they'll move to the platforms that do not exactly have AI creators on them. Or maybe we're going to have collaborations and everyone can now have like their AI, you know, avatar creator and then have like the real guy. I really don't know. Waiting actually to see how this is going to turn out. And why should you care? Even though using AI influencers for promoting products might seem cheaper and quicker for your campaigns, considering the lower sales right now, and the most important thing right now will be the ethical concerns that are involved, it might not be the best choice, you know, for brands if you are leading your brand's conversation around marketing as things currently stand right now. So here we go. I just hope that this is not like a mommy water move. I hope really that this is the best move for everyone, TikTok inclusive. Okay, so one of the things that stood out for me this week, I've talked about all of the things from, you know, the Apple cyber attack to what I'll call the mommy water move by TikTok, yeah, with their AI influencers. I need to get an influencer to make a comment on that anyways. Now, something else really important, TechCabal launched the State of the Tech Report Q1 2024. And of course, you know, we're in April. This is April. If you're listening to this after now, this is April 2024. If you're listening live, well, of course, you know, this is April. And we look back at, you know, one quarter, January, February, March, and we're looking at, oh, what exactly has happened? Q1 in Africa startups. From the report published by TechCabal, profitability of startups / tech-enabled businesses is the deal. So between 2022 and 2023, more than 1,000 people lost their jobs. And I think this actually continued up until late last year. That's one important thing. So what really happened with, I know there was a year I had a show or a series that was just on job losses in the market. And maybe we should start thinking of other things outside of tech, but come on, I don't know if we're past that. We'll find out shortly. And then, of course, yes, making money, TimeBank, Swvl, and yes, the big one, Jumia. God, profit at last. You know how something's happening and you like get that aha moment. You're like, finally struck it. So leadership changes at Jumia, the African e-commerce giant, and well, profit finally at last. And then what else is really important? I think generally the theme, which I kind of like agree with, that the TechCabal team said it's important, is the profitability or the path to profitability not being something that we can just, oh, no, don't worry. We're past that point in 2021 where, you know, everyone is just saying, oh, let's just get it. Now we need to actually be profitable. But I'm not going to talk about this alone because I have someone from TechCabal, an analyst from TechCabal Insights here in the studio with me. And we're just going to briefly over the next few minutes, talk about the major things that stood out, major highlights of Q1 based on the State of the Tech report. Q1 2024. Stay on this side of tech with me. Remember, tech bros, people in tech, tech-enabled businesses, not thieves. We're doing the job, but maybe just in a smarter way.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to catch up on all the live shows right here on AfricaTechRadio.com.